The first cell phone was demonstrated in 1973 by Martin Cooper. You know what wasn't demonstrated? Shared plans. Over 50 years later, you can save on one line thanks to Visible. When you switch to Visible, the wireless company that makes wireless Visible, you can get a one-line plan with unlimited 5G data powered by Verizon for just $25 a month, taxes and fees included. No hidden fees. No, really. You can look around for them. They're not there. Switch now at Visible.com. Save on wireless without the hassle. Switch to Visible today and save at Visible.com. Monthly rate on the Visible plan. For data management practices and additional terms, visit Visible.com.
Hi, I'm Alexis Ohanian. You may know me as one of the co-founders of Reddit, but more recently, a large part of my identity is being a father to my wonderful daughters. In my podcast, Business Dad, I hope to open the conversation about working parents a bit. You'll get to hear from a wide range of business dads, from Rainn Wilson and Guy Raz to Todd Carmichael and Shane Battier, to find out how they balance being a dad with a successful career. Business Dad is available now, so be sure to listen and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.
Do not underestimate the power of PlayStation.
Beyond.
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 Yes, Beyond is the name of the show. This is Beyond episode 495, and I'm Max Scoville, and I'm joined by my good friends Alana Pierce
Sweets.
And Andrew Goldfarb.
Really close to 500, I'm getting very worried.
Yes, well, it's really close to E3, so you should be more worried about that. That's coming up very shortly. I apologize for the skeleton crew of these skeleton people are hanging out with. We got a good show lineup, though. Andrew was in Japan for like 10 days. We got our first look at Far Cry 5. There's a game called Everybody's Golf. Is everybody golf?
Everybody's
golf. Wow, apparently everybody is golf. But in any case, we're going to talk about all of that. Let's get into this first. Like, you went to Japan, dude. Why?
Yeah, it was really whirlwind. We went to a bunch of studios. We went to 7 studios in 9 days, some of which I can talk about, some I can't. And then we also went to a show called Bit Summit, which is sort of like PAX Japan. It's like a really cool, very small, open to the public show. That's like everything from like Nintendo and Sony and Twitch had booths and they were selling merch. But then there were also people like literally making games in their spare time, like games as hobbies.
Okay.
So it was a really cool, like we met a guy who's been working on the same game for 7 years and it's finally coming out. And he just found a publisher. And Cam Shea, who runs our Australia office, actually just put a roundup up of like 18 of the coolest games we saw.
So I heard that like actually famous developers also go to Bit Summit.
Yeah, it's weird in that way. It's like Anuma was there and all kinds of other people. Like I ran into Shuhei there, like all kinds of like
crazy,
completely random, like just checking out like it's a really cool feeling watching someone like Inaba from Platinum standing over someone who made a game in their garage. It's just like a really cool feeling.
You think
you
they go to scout for development talent or
maybe within Japan? I hadn't even thought of that. I mean, possibly actually, because like they can have like a direct line into the indie scene.
Yeah.
But yeah, like that show was really cool. We had originally planned to go to that and we were trying to build in like a couple studio visits around it. And so basically we flew in and out of Tokyo and then we went down to Kyoto for Bit Summit. But in Tokyo, we were able to visit a whole bunch of places. So we have some cool stuff coming. What I can say now is that we were at Atlas, we were at Platinum, we were at Bandai Namco, and we were at Kojima Productions. And Kojima was just like a tour. Like we don't have like Death Stranding crazy scoops coming or anything.
Yeah, I mean, they have to make it first.
Yeah, exactly. And that was the thing. Like it was cool being there because like right now it feels like they're finally like at the point where they have an incredible space and like it everything there like feels like it's like bleeding creativity.
They feel like they moved in kind of.
Yeah. And it's like we didn't really get to see the dev floor. But just like when you come up to it and Marty wrote a thing in January that everybody should read if they haven't, which is kind of a tour of what that place looks like. But when you first come up the elevator, there's like a big, like a pillar that has like the Death Stranding trailer playing projected behind it. And it's just like a camera on it and a single button. And you press it, and like once they buzz you in, the wall next to it opens, and it's an airlock. It's like a huge white lit up hallway with the Luden statue in the middle of it, and you have to like go through it to get into the studio space. And once we got in there, we just funneled straight into a meeting room, and we just had like a quick chat about some stuff. And then the wall behind us was like this like foggy glass, And there was a point where like at the end of our meeting, Kojima was like, okay, look at the wall. And they hit a switch and it lowered the opacity. And you could just see all the way across the studio, like into the dev floor, into the entire other side. And then they hit another switch and then it came back up. And basically, like, they can control, like, the
glass. Just wonder how much money they spent on the building, you know?
Yeah, seriously.
They're like, maybe they should be spending on the game.
Yeah. I mean, I assume, yeah, I guess, like, Sony's funding the game. So it's like, they're probably not worried.
But
those walls were all Sony translucent TVs.
Yeah. yeah, exactly.
I saw Kojima tweeted that they're moving, there are two Luden statues and they're moving the first one. He said shipping to the U.S., so... I'm wondering if it's going to be at E3 and why.
That would be cool.
I mean, you put it at the Sony booth, you get people taking pictures with it, and it's free advertising for a game that comes out in 3 years.
Yeah, I mean, part of me, I hope it's just that. Like, I'm ready for them to not talk about that game for a couple of years, you know? Like, I feel like we got a cool tease. Like, we have no idea what it is, but now I'm just like, it gets to that point where you overhype it, I think, by showing too much of it.
I felt like that with Horizon a little bit, that we kept seeing the same kind of trailers. And I was like, yes, this game is pretty. Yeah. You don't need to keep showing me how pretty this game is. Like, I'm already sold.
And there was so much to it beyond that, you know?
Yeah, stuff that they didn't show. Which is crazy.
I mean, the good news with Death Stranding is we don't actually know what this game looks like at all. Yeah. We have
is
no
it a
idea.
Game?
We
is
don't
it a
know
series
what,
of cutscenes?
We don't know what kind of game it is. Yeah. Like, we don't have the faintest idea, like, what it's about plot-wise. Because it's all just weird, surrealist, like, vignettes that we've seen so far. Whereas, like, you know, he could really reveal something of like, Metal Gear. We're like, okay, well, we assume that it's loosely related to the previous Metal Gear games.
Yeah, third-person action.
And, I mean,
yeah.
with Horizon, they showed us the game in action. We were like, oh, that's how you play the game. You fight the big dinosaur thing. You shoot it in the nads. But, like, I don't know what the hell Death Stranding's about.
You know, I think with Death Stranding, because of the way that we've seen the trailers that have come out for it, if you even want to call them that, I feel like they are such interesting, small bits of film that I am so okay with them coming out for a long time, even if it's not to sell me on that game. Like, I could watch those trailers if they're all that weird because they're so fascinating and they're good to watch. They're like interesting short films.
Dude, I bought the song from the last trailer on vinyl. Like, he put out like Low Roar.
Oh, Low Roar, yeah.
And it's just, I'm like, okay, and it's got like Norman Reedus's nasty hand on the cover of it. And I'm like, all right, that's a thing that exists.
Yeah, it's super strange.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. That's what I like about Kojima is that the process of making games is, it's not particularly tactile. You can make games entirely sitting at a computer, and it's sort of like, oh, you see most game studios, and they look like offices. You know, they're not particularly exciting. But I think that he understands that there is that level of movie magic, which kind of helps almost bolster the significance of a game. And so to have like this studio that's like, I mean, it's kind of what like Lucas was doing with Industrial Light and Magic back in the day. It was like this weird, like, oh, what is this funny like think tank, like, you know, Willy Wonka's Chocolate Factory type of setup. And the fact that he's like, yeah, there's a giant brilliantly lit up Apple store of a hallway that has an airlock, and then there's translucent VR mission walls to see through. And then he's like, he teases it with, you know, bizarre kind of promotional shorts. And that's, I mean, he's always been weird about it, you know? Yeah. Like, he's always been sort of like, I don't think the fourth wall even counts. It's something much weirder than that because, you know, obviously your games are interactive. But think about how, like, he announced the Phantom Pain and it was like the negative space said Metal Gear Solid 5.
Yeah.
It took people 25 minutes to figure that out. But then he still had a video where Jeff Keighley interviewed that mummy. It's just like, I like that there's that kind of meta. It's the meta narrative, you know?
It's like the whole studio is reflective of his art direction, apparently, which I also think is really cool. Aside from Kojima.
Yeah. Talk about Atlas. Go on.
Oh, Atlas was amazing just seeing. We saw the Studio Zero space, and we'll have some stuff coming pretty soon with that. I mean, it was that trip was mainly looking at what they're up to next. Mm-hmm. Not in terms of like, here's the announcement of our next thing, but more of like structurally, what are they becoming? And Platinum was kind of the same thing. And we'll have some cool stuff rolling out.
How was it
from both
for
of those.
You, Andrew Goldfarb, America's number one Persona fan?
It was cool. It was there's so much, like, there's basically a Persona museum there, and like seeing all of their merch and like all the stuff they had, and like being like, oh, I have that in my desk, and then like passing around photos of my desk and stuff was like so nerdy, but such like a cool little moment. And like, yeah, we met Hoshino and Sojima and Meguro, who I'm probably butchering pronunciation of, but those are like the brain trust behind Persona 3, 4, and 5 and Catherine.
That's nuts.
It was really cool. Yeah, that was awesome.
Like, did you freak out? Like, did you lose your... Are you crying?
I freaked out a little bit. I barely managed to maintain professionalism. Caleb, who was with us, was just laughing at me because it was just like... It was, like, overwhelming to see, like, everything. To be, like, in the base camp of Persona was really, really cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah, it was awesome. And Sojima drew me a Morgana that's like personalized to me.
That's so cool.
That I'm getting
personalized.
Hey. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we'll have stuff coming. Like, I don't want to get too much into what we did with Bandai Namco or with Platinum, sure. But we'll have some cool interviews and just little gameplay things coming, and it was a cool week and a half.
That's very exciting. It's always weird to do like a big preview, you know, mission thing right before E3 and have like, I'm sure, things that you want to talk about, but
yeah, it's like it's that weird, it's like the weird calm before the storm feeling of like, now we're in like full E3 mode. Like that felt like it's same thing with like Judges Week that Brandon and Ryan were at, where like that feels like the last hurrah before you like really kick off E3.
This week my job is 100% E3.
Yeah, totally.
And we're, like it's, yeah, we've, I mean, done. Yeah, getting a lot of stuff ready for the next couple weeks. So if we seem scattered, apologies. We're just kind of getting ready for stuff. It's also always weird, the kind of the news that trickles out. Either you get some massive leak, or it's some sort of just quiet sort of whisper of like, oh, this isn't happening.
It's either stuff that was too small for E3, or news that a game won't be at E3, or a leak. Like, that's pretty much what we have.
So we got some of that. We learned, this is interesting, we learned that the FF7 remake is switching to internal development. So they were working with, was it CyberConnect?
Yep.
And now it sounds like Square Enix is kind of like, okay, let's just bring that back home. Not sure what that means. I get that. Was there a formal announcement that this is a ways off?
I mean,
no.
There was an offhanded comment in their last earnings thing that Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy 7 Remake are like in the next couple of years. Like they didn't.
They've never given us a year, and they've never said like it's. Okay. A long way away.
And we know that Final Fantasy is like in multiple parts and like they're like full
I wonder
game
if they're still going to do that though after like Hitman. I think that was a really good game. You played the first episode, didn't you?
I played a bit of it. Yeah, I played a bit of the first episode and then I just was like, I don't know if I love this. And I heard
really
the
like
ones
it.
Were incredible.
Yeah, so. It's very good. Yeah. But because it released in episodes, I think a lot less people played it. And I wonder if they're kind of revising that strategy now with Final Fantasy.
Yeah, I wonder if we'll get sort of like an episode to Sky with FF7 and just something to kind of for people to chew on and get excited about and help kind of like just stir up the waters and get people buying. Keep
I hope so. I mean, they've shown so much of Midgar stuff that it's like, even if they just let us do like some run around Midgar, like very basic, like they don't have to do like the whole rest of the game, but I think it would be fun just let people mess
with
the battle
system. Final Fantasy 15 demo.
Yeah, like, yeah, that was this guy. Yeah.
Oh, that's what. Yeah. That was awesome.
Yeah, that would be really cool.
Really good.
So it'd be cool if we got something like that. That said, the announcement that they're switching to internal development doesn't sound particularly like hooray. You know, like just that they're like, hey, we've already given you like teasers and trailers and stuff for this, and I know you want to play it. We're shifting things around back here. Sorry, might be a second.
It's really interesting the way that they have this stable of talent that I feel like we're just not even familiar with. Like when Tabata took over Final Fantasy 15, it was like, oh, the Type Zero guy? Like that's weird. Can he run a project that big? And then, And so like this is the Mobius Final Fantasy guy, which is like a really interesting choice to run a project this big, but like I feel like they wouldn't put it in someone's hands especially if there were problems at CyberConnect and now they're kind of like recentering. Yeah. I feel like they wouldn't give it to someone who isn't capable. Mm-hmm. So I'm really curious to see like, you might be right. Like I wonder if they are rethinking the entire thing structurally.
Yeah.
It's just such a big undertaking if it actually maintains the standard that those trailers look like. And it's mm-hmm. such like, it is such a revered game that like you can't mess it up. Like you can't make the bad remake of Final Fantasy VII after people have been asking for so long.
Yeah.
In other news, also kind of disappointing. Hey, remember what was that other big game they announced at Sony's press?
Kickstarter. I believe it was Kickstarter.
Shenmue 3. Yeah. So they announced that Shenmue 3, the game that had a Kickstarter launch at E3 last year. It won't be at E3 this year, if that's a huge surprise to anybody.
Hey, you know what game's probably not going to hit that December 2017 target? Oh, it's Shenmue 3.
Imagine that. So it's kind of a bummer to think like, oh, hey, like all those big things like Kingdom Hearts 3 and Final Fantasy VII Remake and Shenmue 3 that were like, that we imagine them as being things that we get to have soon, but maybe not. And that kind of makes me wonder like, what are we going to see on Sony's show this year?
But Spider-Man and God of War.
Yeah.
I feel like Sony's all good for the next year. Like, I feel like there's enough padding. And then if those come out in 2-3 years, like, I feel like there's a pretty solid stream of
it's such a,
right now.
It's such a weird thing that if they, like, they, you're right that Death Stranding's probably years away and these games are probably years away. And so it's a weird thing where, like, if Sony comes out this year and they just show, you know, Dreams and Days Gone and Spider-Man and God
Dreams.
Of War, like, if they just show stuff they've announced, I feel like people are going to come away disappointed, even though that shouldn't be disappointing if all of those are coming soon, you know?
Well, I would expect that we'll get, like, an announcement of something new that we won't see for another 3 years, and it'll just be a cycle that it kind of
keep it going. Yeah,
Spider-Man 2.
Yeah.
Anyway, good stuff. We finally got our proper, like, look at Far Cry 5. They put out a trailer that shows off what that's about, and there's a big discourse about it. So yeah, it's like,
what is it? It's a change.org. Is that what the thing is?
Yeah, the petition.
Is it a petition to get the game banned?
We honestly don't know if it's a joke or not, but there is a petition to have Far Cry 5 banned because it's about killing Christian Americans who are, I mean, they're also like a militant cult, but you know, what's Waco? I don't know. Anyway, I'm excited because this has aerial combat and farm animals. So like, you know, as it being a Far Cry game, Far Cry games have always been kind of weird and out there, and you've got like a, you know, corrupt CIA guy giving you a flamethrower to go burn
you've
a pot.
You've played all of them, right?
Yeah, I guess I have.
The 3 is my favorite.
Yeah.
I totally respect the hell out of 2, but I dropped off around Primal where I tried to play it and just didn't get super invested in it.
Yeah.
Whereas I feel like this is like back to what I'm going to really like in a Far Cry game.
Yeah, I don't, like, everyone's like, oh, America's not that exotic, and it's like, I have faith that it's going to be like,
exotic isn't what I care about.
Yeah.
They have drug trips in those games for that. Like, it's fine. They'll make
right,
it weird.
Right. Also, like, it's, I mean, you've got enough kind of variety of climate and stuff. I'm honestly, like, I'm gonna be honest, I'm pretty excited about the farm animals and the tractors.
Yep.
If this turns into like that.
Oh, you too?
Yeah. Farm animals and tractors? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh.
I think it's like, skin them.
There's like a pitchfork that you can throw. Like, I don't, like, they've got like a bunch of gnarly stuff. I think aerial combat is really the thing that will probably, I guess you had that little gyrocopter in 4. And you had like owl controls in Primal, but like as far as like proper like get in a plane and screw around, they've kind of been.
It's hard to do. It's really hard to make that work.
I'm totally in conceptually.
Yeah.
I'm a little confused about what the game is, and like I know obviously what a Far Cry game is, but I was surprised how little like gameplay they've showed, and how little I understand about like the protagonist or anything. Mm-hmm. Like I saw a lot of the comments.
Have protagonists?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's true, right? Like, you're ultimately just going to be like a camera with arms anyway.
Jason Brody.
Yeah, I mean, totally. But it was interesting to me that like the way they revealed that game, I saw a lot of comments on IGN that thought those 3 character trailers were people you played as, and I think it's really interesting that like people who've played Far Cry get it, but I totally felt like they just needed to show 10 seconds of gameplay so people understood what you were doing.
Yeah, I mean, Far Cry's like strong suit's always been just the gameplay and the kind of the freedom to run around and just get in trouble. And as far as characters go, like, there've been some cool ones. Like, I liked Voss, but then there's all those side characters who I'm like, I don't really care that much.
Yeah.
There's that CIA dude who shows up in like 4 after 3, and I'm like, they're like, remember him? And I'm like, yeah, I guess.
You're like, kind of, yeah.
Give me that flamethrower. He's kind
of
weird.
Who's the other villain after Voss at the end of 3, like the second half of the game villain?
Like Jeff or whatever?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
It's not
yeah.
his name at all.
Yeah.
But,
well, there are technically 3 of them. There's the creepy Australian dude.
Yeah, yeah,
Voss,
yeah.
And then there's the end guy.
Yeah.
Yeah, I forgot the name of the end guy.
I don't know,
yeah.
But they always put this emphasis on these characters who are sort of like performing directly to you. And then as far as like an actual character you're playing as, like, yeah, we have the name Jason Brody, like, but you're like, I don't know. Eh, you know.
I'm okay with not being a character in a Far Cry game.
Yeah.
I don't mind that at all. But I think you're totally right, and I would like to see combat. Like, one of the things that I think they've expanded on well is having combos or like chains, basically.
Yeah, yeah,
like, I like that kind of stuff in combat. That I would like to see an expansion on that in the trailers. But I would guess they're waiting for E3.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. And at E3, I'm sure we'll get answers. To this. It was just weird because like bits and pieces were coming out that like you can choose the gender and race of your protagonist. Mm. But it's like, in a Far Cry game, does that matter?
Yeah.
And like, so that makes me think maybe there is a more involved role for the protagonist this time around. And it just like, the amount of information coming out about it, 100%, you're right that like at E3, all these questions will be answered. But it was just like felt like a weird like half measure to tell us but not tell us.
It's like they gave us teases but branded it as an official trailer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It's also, I mean, it's also kind of, it's an ambitious thing to be trying to tackle right now because the American political climate is pretty intense right now. So to be doing something like this and to do it either in an exploitative manner that's just sort of like, hey, look at this. It's crazy and offensive. Whoa, aren't we edgy? And be like, great. Okay, well, it's okay, fine. that's one option. The other option is that it's like way too real. And I'm like, I don't want to play this. This is depressing.
Yeah.
I'll just go watch CNN to cheer myself up.
When Ubisoft touches on politics, they don't tend to really make a statement. They just tend to be like, this is happening right now. Let's put you in this circumstance. And like their official statement is, you know, we like players to be able to draw their own conclusions. But I take it as we don't want to offend anyone. So I think that they'll probably play it safe and like focus in on the cult aspect. So it doesn't seem like they're actually attacking anyone.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to do. It's going to be interesting.
It really is. Our friend Callie, who's over at GameSpot now, used to be at IGN. I recommend you read her piece on it.
I read that this morning.
It was really good.
A really good, like, basically it says exactly that. That, like, you have to, if you're going to do it, like, it could be done really well or it could be done very badly, you know? And I think
they
like,
just won't do anything. In the same way that the first Watch Dogs was a blank character in, and they could have made really interesting political commentary on censorship and on Watch Dogs, but they didn't. They just like
they dip their toe in exactly. This weird way. Yeah, it's like they skirt around. They have the appearance of saying something without actually saying anything.
Yes.
And it's like I hope this game's not that. Like I
absolutely think it will be that.
I think that I don't know. That franchise is really weird, and like they have been able to like Far Cry 2 especially is like really bizarre and like subverts everything the games do. So it's like
malaria.
Exactly. So like I would love to see them like live up to that and do something like really bold and ambitious and like, yeah, it'll piss some people off. But like, I would just love to see them have something to say.
Yeah.
And I hope ultimately you're probably going to be right, but I really hope that this is the game that like finally like has some kind of good commentary about like the current state of,
you know, I would love
America.
That too. We want like all games to be like Spec Ops, right?
Yeah.
Like
yeah,
you
exactly.
want everything to make me think that much and it would be amazing. But I just think that it's so much of a risk for them to alienate part of their audience. And,
yeah.
I mean,
especially a big company like that. Yeah.
Exactly.
The thing is though, like commentary is it's kind of static in a sense, you know, it's, you can't be like, hey, we're making a commentary on something, but it's open to interpretation. Cause it's like, I mean, I guess that's sort of,
that's
art,
what they officially say. They're
right.
like, we like to let the players decide and ask their own questions.
Yeah.
Like, no, you just don't present anything.
Yeah.
Like, come on.
I mean, like what I hope is that at the beginning of Far Cry 4, there was that weird thing where you could like just sit there and like, what's his face?
Yeah, you wait for like 5 minutes.
Pagan Man.
Pagan Man would come back and be like, anyway, let's go.
Thanks for waiting, bud.
Yeah, here's the end of the game. You just beat it by just sitting there. And you're like, that was it. I like the idea of that kind of stuff where it plays with the game telling you to do stuff as a player versus, I don't know, I guess there's the option to play the video game like a video game. There's the option to play the game like it's actually a real thing, you know?
Yeah.
But yeah, like Far Cry, I kind of don't like it as a political platform. Like it's just because it is so inherently sort of stupid. Like it's a game where I'm going to like, you know, I'm going to let a tiger loose and it's going to bite someone.
I think like I really enjoy Far Cry games and will probably like it regardless, but I also would prefer a strong political stance than something that seems in the middle ground so as not to offend. And I mean that in that I would like prefer it to vehemently disagree with my politics than to not say anything at all. Like I would prefer for it to pick a side because it makes it better, but that's still like a light criticism. I don't think it ruins the game at all because it's like it's still, Far Cry games are open and fun. Like,
I think they have to just figure out what the franchise is. Like I think honestly, like they, with Blood Dragon and even with Primal to some extent, like they got really weird. Mm-hmm. And I think
Dragon
now,
rolls.
Yeah, like Blood Dragon's awesome. And it's like, if they want to be a goofy, fun game, I fully support that. Like it's, but if they want to pivot back to being a little more serious, like I kind of am on board with that too. Like I'm curious to see, you can't have both.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to see if they just are willing to like let go of the goofiness, if they really want to swing into seriousness. Or if they have these like really serious trailers, but it's going to end up just being a goofy, dumb game.
Yeah, that's what bugged me about 4 was that it always felt like 3 felt like a sort of politically incorrect Mountain Dew commercial that was like half rooted in kind of old like pulp adventure stories of the 30s that are like, oh, the white savior's here. But then you're also like, I got sick tribal tattoos, brah. Let's go hang gliding.
Is that one part where you get high and the boss is just this giant woman?
Yeah. That's like
a very weird,
funny, strange game.
Out.
Yeah. And you set a bear on fire and you're like, well, that's sort of odd. It doesn't really make a lot of sense, but I'll live with it. And then 4 felt much less like.
The game had bears?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
3?
3 had bears.
Yeah, you could
see tons of bears.
Could, yeah.
Maybe
bears.
I avoided the bears because I was very. I'm very careful about what I will actually attack in Far Cry games, which technically makes me bad because it means that I don't farm the right things.
Yeah.
But like I was completely against hurting a turtle.
Loose interpretation of the word farming, but okay. 4 felt like a Rage Against the Machine poster, or like they did the whole tie-in with like Vice documentary stuff, and it was like after Blood Dragon, which was so kind of leaning into like the absurd and just the over the top style of it, that they were like, hey, we went to Nepal and like actually checked out what goes on there, and this is like fairly realistic. And I'm like, no, it isn't. I'm gonna fly a gyrocopter into a tiger. Like, it's not, that's not the part that I like. And
yeah,
I get what you're doing, but
I mean, that's kind of been the problem, is that the gameplay is always incongruous with the story. Like, yeah. I think they need, I want to see them bridge that gap. I either want to see them just...
Ludonarrative dissonance.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Like, I want to see either just Blood Dragon just embrace how goofy it is, or, like, if they're going to go serious, go serious. And, like, the gameplay...
Present something like a good Netflix series. Like, exactly. That would be the ideal. Like, yeah. Make this one be like Breaking Bad.
That would be really cool.
Right, but I mean, it's tricky to tell a serious story when you've got the player having the option to set an animal on fire.
Yeah, you're totally right.
But yeah, like, if this is... If I can play this like a modern open world redneck rampage, then that's okay. And if I can call it farm crimes and
what
go around doing bad
Dynasty.
Things to the farm animals. Yeah, those also, yeah, the Duck Dynasty.
Oh, you
mod.
Can read our review on IGN.com.
Yeah.
I'm excited to see more E3 because that trailer definitely got my attention.
Yeah.
And like, they're so good at villains that if nothing else, like, I totally get that like Boyd Crowder Justified vibe from The Father. And like, I want to be really excited for this game. I have just trained myself to be cautious with everything, I guess.
That's a good thing to do, just to be cautious about everything.
Yeah, look both ways before you pre-order a game.
Yeah. You know, being cautious is the key rule for golf.
Oh.
Are we doing it? Are we talking about everybody's golf?
Yes, we're talking about everybody's golf.
Okay. I'm going to get made fun of. I've already gotten made fun of by Marty for saying this. So for background, like the first party PlayStation franchises that are still around that have been on PS1, 2, 3, 4, Everybody's Golf, which was Hot Shots Golf, and Gran Turismo. And those both have new installments coming out this year. Obviously, like, tons of games have improvements between generations and blah, blah, blah. Playing Everybody's Golf, it feels like the most, like, noticeably next-gen upgrade to a franchise of, like, anything. Because it's like... What's up?
Yes, I have a question. Did they rebrand Hot Shots Golf to Everybody's Golf because only hot shots at golf were playing it and they wanted to attract a wider audience?
Too many hot shots. Yeah. No, it was called Everybody's Golf in Japan and Europe.
Hmm.
And so there's been this divide forever that it was only called Hot Shots Golf here.
Oh.
And now they're finally just consolidating the name.
Huh.
But it's really, it sounds insane. And like, yes, I'm just talking about a golf game. And ultimately, it is still just a cartoony golf game. But like, they have a really robust character creator, which is just like, from the get-go, is just like really fun. And like, you can make like really, like, I spent a lot of time with it. And like, you can really have fun with it. Like, there's a lot to it. But beyond that, like, it's an open world golf game. Like, and they messed with that in like the Vita version. They had like a lobby that where you could like walk around and see people. But this is like so much more robust than that. Like, it's like huge. And it says you eventually.
So is it more
like,
of a social game than a golf game?
No, it's still very much a golf game. It's okay. Just they just super have social elements if you want them.
Okay.
You can totally just ignore it and play 18 holes of golf. But like, it said you eventually need, because the courses are huge. So you eventually need like a golf cart to get around. And they're teasing like fishing mini games and
what?
Stuff that there's like,
incredible.
They're just adding so much to it. And so I don't know. The beta was just super basic. And it was a couple, like I played one 18 hole course. And I messed with, there's a thing called Turf War, which is like an online mode. But it was like, I don't know, I really genuinely had so much more fun with it than I expected to.
So like, I'm half messing with you and making fun of you, but I'm also like, golf is one of those
odd things. I also want to play it.
Yeah, like I kind of actively hate golf as a real thing.
Yeah,
it's like, let's.
There's a game. It's great.
Yeah, as in video games, it's like it's fun as hell. I used to play like the terrible like Microsoft Windows 95 golf.
I think that's actually what it was called. It was like Microsoft Windows golf.
Where you like, and it was just like that was like a completely linear like, and I didn't know what the heck. I didn't know how to play golf,
too.
But yeah, it was just kind of like a weird fun like hit the ball kind of thing. You know?
And that's the thing, like those and Tiger Woods never quite hooked me in the way that like Mario Golf did, and that Hot Shots Golf always had, because like it's a really good marriage of like really carefully thought out golf mechanics that you wouldn't expect, but also like it's very arcadey and easy and accessible until difficulty ramps up. And like, this is like, I don't know, this just feels like a, like obviously if you hated all the other Hot Shots games, you're not going to magically love this one, but it just feels like a really smart evolution of it that feels like what I want to see from franchises on coming to PS4.
I mean, if you get to drive around golf carts and like make funny little avatars, like that sounds like a good time.
Yeah, it totally, like the beta was only 2 days long, and when it ended I was like, oh man, like I'm itching for more of it.
When does that come out?
August. It's like last week of August, I think.
Okay, that's cool. Well, speaking of golf, I played this game. I mentioned this last week. It's called Moonshot Galaxy, and it's a PSVR game. All right, this segment's called What VR Playing. That's what it's called. But no, it's a PSVR game. I think the guy who made it is a Beyond fan and sent over codes. I might be mistaken there. It's really cool though. It's basically Mario Galaxy mini golf. If that makes any sense, like you got all these little kind of little planets, like little prince planets, and you're playing golf on them. But there's no like. There's no stick. You're just using the move controllers to basically like sort of rubber band stuff back and sort of like stretch it. It almost feels like billiards in that sense. But there's all these like weird, just totally, you know, surreal like loop the loops, and there's like a volcano you gotta like knock the ball into. And
that sounds like perfect for VR.
Yeah. And it's also like I've been trying to find that sweet spot of comfortable VR and stuff that isn't you know, it isn't like aggressive to like play long chunks of it, but in this case you're basically sitting down and it's more like you're, you know, kind of manipulating this big diorama in front of you to try to move stuff around. Like it doesn't feel like, if it was a game where I had to stand in front of my TV with a helmet on and look at my hands and hit golf that way, I'd be like, this is tiring and I don't want to do it. But it's like I keep trying to be like, okay, would this work outside of VR? And I guess it maybe could, but it would be really cumbersome control-wise.
Like a mobile game, maybe?
I mean,
or like with touch.
Yeah.
I think you could scale it down to be so it's sort of a not two-dimensional, but like maybe have slightly less, I guess, personalized of a camera, you know? Mm-hmm. But it would be way less interesting. It'd still be a fun, you know, fun game. But yeah, that's out in the wild. Another game is coming out. It's called Tiny Tracks, which I think is basically a slot car VR game. Where you are building like crazy racetracks all around yourself, and it's
that's cool.
Actually awesome.
Yeah, and it's a cool idea. Again, it's like it's the obvious kind of like gimmickry of VR is, hey, you put this thing on your head and you can be anywhere, and it's like that's great, except sometimes being someplace else is horribly disorienting. So maybe like the solution for some of that stuff is like these virtual miniatures. And I mean, we've seen
we uploaded the first episode of a new series. It's VR Mechanics 101, and the first episode that we did was exploring environments in VR and how different games make that work. And like the main one is teleportation, because obviously it reduces motion sickness. And then another one is just like having you kind of stand and be able to observe, but sit in one place basically.
Yeah.
And then the third one that's the most common and most effective is when you get a very small playing field that you can move around as much as you want to, because that's like an answer to room scale VR that doesn't need a full room. It's like it's interesting to see the way different VR games are tackling exploration, especially when players can look wherever they want to. So it's like, how, like for something that's an action focused game, how do you, or a story action adventure, how do you get them to actually pay attention to the story? And it's like there's a lot of really cool tricks that you see used in VR where sometimes they'll put you in an area that just doesn't have anything else interesting to look at, but you don't notice that because you're not paying attention to it. It's like all these little subconscious things that like really focus attention.
Well, that's so cool that it's like, here are the three ways you can do that currently, until somebody just breaks it and makes something entirely new.
Yeah.
But I do like the sort of the diorama playset approach, and we're seeing this with it's like Tiny
Fantastic
Tracks
Contraption
and
has
that. And there's, what is it, Cowboys and Dinos, is that what it's called? I think it's got Cowboys and Dinos in it.
Yeah,
what
I think
I've been
that might be the name. And
but that's all about like picking up little things and rearranging them.
Job Simulator is kind of like that.
Yeah. I mean, Job Simulator is much more first person, but you're like, I don't know.
Less of a playground.
I had a friend over. We got like just very drunk this weekend, and he was like, "You got VR?" I was like, "Yeah, I got VR. Let's play VR." And I like put it on his head, and like I couldn't figure out how to adjust the height. And I was like, "This isn't working. You want to be a bird?" And he's like, "Okay, I'll be a bird." We're just like, "Yeah,
dude." We're gonna have some cool VR stuff from that trip we just took. One of the things we did, I'm excited to talk to you guys about, because I think people are understanding that VR can be more like. Very early on, people stopped using the word game and used the word experience.
Right.
And I really like that approach. I think that there's more to it than just like a first person shooter where you can look in every direction or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think like my favorite VR games is still Chronos and Superhot. Like Superhot in VR is so good.
It changes the game. Like I feel like with Superhot, like I've actually only played Superhot in VR. So it's like, I would imagine like not having that degree of like, I don't know, like,
it's almost a completely different game.
Yeah.
But, like, both of those are technically, like, Superhot is a game.
Yeah.
And Chronos is definitely a game. It's, like, fixed camera. It's an action-adventure. It's basically Zelda Dark Souls-type game. But, like, there are short films in VR now. There's one called Alamette that's absolutely beautiful. Like, there are a bunch of different things still happening with that platform, and it's like we haven't seen a ton of stuff lately for PSVR, and I want more of that stuff. I want the games that I like are really good because they use mechanics that have worked in video games previously and aren't fully taking advantage of VR. But
I think that's the concern, is that like they, like, I don't know, but I'm assuming these are just more expensive to develop. And so like the really high end VR experiences, I think, are happening on Vive and Oculus, because it's just probably
those two are
more of a PC friendly platform. So, like, and I don't know, like PSVR, like it's, I want to see that stuff coming to PSVR too, because that's the only one that I, like, I don't own one, but it's like I would if there was something compelling enough to make me want to play in my apartment.
Yeah.
What's really fun is we're seeing, and I just like looked at the, I don't even know what screen it is, but where they have like recommended VR stuff, and it's, they're making all these like small sort of bite-sized experiences that are tie-ins with movies. The thing that needs to happen is those need to be like either free or like trials.
Yeah.
Oh, and they aren't?
They're not. Yeah, there's one that's like $10 and it's for The Martian. And I'm like, dude, I could, like, for $10 I could just buy the movie The Martian. And that's like,
that's really dumb.
A 3-hour movie. And then there's like a bunch of other ones.
I would have thought that they would use those as a different form of advertising rather than making
payments. Right. And there's some that are free. I think there's one that's like, it's like a Chainsmokers concert, which I don't ever want to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's there. and I mean, they have ones, they have all these different kind of competing platforms that are like VR video services. Where they're like, hey, like the one that Brian talked about where you see the animals going to the bathroom. But, you know, there's other ones where it's like, do you want to go like snowboarding? Do you want to see like a plane crash or a shark attack or whatever? And it's like, those are cool. But so far there hasn't been like, I don't think there's been one that really just like, that just grabs it, you know, just really gets a handle on it.
I hope we see more PSVR titles.
Yeah. 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 I mean, it's a VR in general, PlayStation or otherwise, is like a really cool, it's an incredible thing. And it's, I hope we get more of it. So.
Yeah. I hope Sony leans into it at E3. I hope it doesn't become yet another Sony hardware thing where they like gave it a year and then jump ship. Well, like I want to see them, and I do think they believe in it. Like, I do think they see it as a new hardware launch. So like, I'm hoping we get like at least half a dozen like really cool PSVR experiences because like I,
or a price drop.
I've really come around. Like, I was really skeptical on VR. Like, I really just kind of didn't care. And then now I've started to do enough things where I'm like, I want to be excited for it, but they're just, the experiences that excite me are kind of still few and far between.
Yeah.
Like, I've played more bad VR things than good ones. And so I'm just, I'm waiting for that thing, you know, to hook me. And I think like, I love PlayStation. Like, if they can find whatever it is that like really makes me want to jump in, then I'm game.
Yeah.
But
it's like Superhot and Robo Recall are games that are like cool enough for me to want to own VR that I could play constantly.
Yeah.
There isn't quite anything like that on PR.
Yeah. Yep. Anyway, that was What VR Playing. The number one. Such a terrible name. Now it's time for Rapid Fire, which is when you guys ask us questions. You can head over to facebook.com/group/podcastbeyond or groups.com/.
Nope.
Dreams.
Did you see someone tweeted us that he went?
Yeah,
no, that's an actual website. We found out that groups.com/podcastbeyond is just a website that has a bunch of our videos. That's not actually, that's a bad joke that went too far and now is a real thing, because that's how humor works. But yeah, anyway, Rick Nugent says, so Capcom seems to be doing some fan service lately. Mega Man Collection, Disney Collection, and Dragon's Dogma coming to current gen. Is there anything in their library you'd like to see ported? Personally, I'd like an Onimusha HD Collection.
Ooh.
Alana, you are super stoked about Dragon's Dogma?
Oh, I love Dragon's Dogma so much, especially because it's Dark Arisen, which is just like Dragon's Dogma, but better and easier to play. I love that game. If you haven't already played, you should totally check it out. It was my game of the year it came out. But other than that, it would be Okami.
Yeah, that checks out.
Yeah. Okami and PS4 would be so pretty.
Yeah.
I would like to see, I don't know, it's like, it's weird because there's like the part of my brain that's like the super nostalgic, like when I was a kid, Capcom games. And then there's like the weird, like, I guess I would play back through like Devil May Cry if they brought it over to PS4, like especially the most recent one, because I
didn't
play any time with it.
Didn't they just do the HD collection last gen?
On PS3?
Didn't they bring over the last,
I think so.
Yeah, they did.
But I don't think, I could totally be wrong because I just haven't looked into it.
Are you talking about Devil May Cry or DMC?
Well, I mean, both. Like, I want all of them. Like, because, like, I liked...
I really liked DMC.
Like, I don't think any of them were playable on PS4. I could be wrong. But, like, I would love to go back.
Yeah.
Because, like, that's a franchise that, like, I like the combat in. But I don't know. Like, for me, that's not, like, my first answer. My first answer is still, like, more stuff like the Legacy Collection. Like, bring back stuff from, like, when we were kids. Even, like obviously not in PS4, but like I would love to see them revive like Minish Cap and stuff that they did in like with Nintendo. Like, I would just love to see Capcom bringing back more like of their like like, I love what they did with this Saturday morning cartoon collection thing.
Disney
like
afternoon collection,
such a cool idea. Like, I want to see more of that stuff.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. I know it's very tricky with how Nintendo licensed stuff back in the day, and how like a Nintendo game is a Nintendo game first, then a Capcom game second, and a Disney game third, or however the hell that works out. But if we can get more stuff like the Disney afternoon collection, maybe a 16-bit version, I'd be super stoked on that.
Awesome.
Especially with all like the weird behind the scenes stuff and like making of things. And I mean, it'd be awesome if they just like threw in some like, I don't know, featurettes where people talk about like interview developers and stuff. I mean, like Mickey Mania, that's a David Jaffe game. Like, how do you go from making a game where you're like, ah, you want to fight Steamboat Willie? Well, you'll enjoy my next game. It's about a flaming ice cream truck that shoots missiles out of it. You're like, what? Anyway, Kristen Bates says, if you were forced to get a tattoo of any video game character, who or what would you choose?
I already got two of those.
Yeah?
Yeah, I have one Persona-inspired one, and then, like, I want an Earthbound one. Like, that's my go-to answer for sure.
Yeah. I want to get some Yoji Shinkawa Metal Gear art at some point.
That'd be rad, cool. Yeah.
I don't know where I'm going to get it, but it's just, yeah.
That's, full back.
Yeah, just a big, huge fat man in his bomb suit, his rollerblades, just going around having that wine.
Yeah, I already have Yoshi and Charizard. If I were to get anything else, it would be just Majora's Mask.
And you got a Deadly Premonition tattoo, too.
That's my favorite.
It's not a character, really, but it's like a...
Yeah, and you have, like, Pokemon stuff. Like, I feel like you're...
They're all, like, from things that just meant a lot to me when I was a kid, basically. Yeah. And, yeah, Majora's Mask is the only one that I feel like is missing. But I'm also, like, I don't have that much space to keep adding video game tattoos, so I'm not getting any more.
You could just get huge.
That's good point.
Play more realistic.
Yeah. No, I do want one more tattoo, but I'm waiting. I'm, like, going to...
Yeah.
I definitely, like, I've wanted an Earthbound one for a very long time. It's
I feel like you've been saying that, like, since I met you.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's hard, right? Because, like, especially for a game that means that much to me, it's, like, hard narrowing it down to one thing.
Yeah.
And I don't want, like, an Earthbound sleeve. Like, I want to narrow it down to, like, one image that means something to me. Like, I toured with getting King, which is the dog. Or it's getting Ness. I don't know. Like, I'll get something eventually.
What if you got the Ness's entire shirt tattooed on your torso?
Yeah, and then I don't have to wear a shirt anymore.
Yeah, it'd be great. Yeah. It's funny stripes.
Yeah.
All right.
Good idea.
Phil Mansfield said, this is perfect for Andrew. I've seen many complaints that Persona 5 is too long, i.e. 100 plus hours, yet people are sinking that much time into Breath of the Wild. What are your thoughts about the length of it, as well as if a game can actually be too long?
I mean, any game is like, games can definitely overstay their welcome. I think anything... Like, there are games where they're only 3 hours and that's perfect. And then I'd like, Persona is so involved that I think it kind of has to be that long in order to tell that story.
I think a game that is too long is a game that obviously becomes repetitive or has padding to be longer.
Yes, exactly.
And that definitely happens.
I mean, that happens more often than it doesn't.
I thought Uncharted was too long, like by a couple hours.
Yeah, I think a lot of games feel the need to, especially single player games, feel the need to like extend. I mean, even games I love, like I love The Last of Us, but like there are combat sections where I was just like, oh, I don't want to do this again, you know? And I think like Tomb Raider and Bioshock Infinite and all those games like could probably even cut in half and I would have been fine with it.
Yeah.
I think like for me, like Persona specifically, I totally don't think it's too long, but
I don't know that an RPG can be too long.
Well, especially because there's like you invest time into grinding and into things that add time. I mean, for me, I understand why that turns people off.
Yeah.
Like I totally get why that would be too long for you, but that doesn't necessarily mean like objectively too long.
Also, comparing it to Breath of the Wild, it's handheld. That makes such a big difference, I think. Like if Persona 5 were on the Switch, I would have destroyed that game by now.
Yep. Yeah.
And I actually just bought it this weekend. So,
and that's how it was with Persona 4 on Vita. Like it was like, I poured so much time to that game partially because I could just take it everywhere.
Yeah.
And I think that franchise like has done really well on portable. So it's like, as much as it's gorgeous on PS4, like I am a little bummed it's not on Vita because I feel like it would actually be a really nice place for it if it was even possible.
But slight sidestep. I bought Persona 5, Nia, and Nioh this weekend and played like an hour of each of them. And they're all really good games.
Like video holy game crap, they're all really good.
It's just because I'd been traveling so much that I was like, I feel like I need to actually finally catch up on this stuff.
You need to play Nier.
Right before E3.
Yeah.
I also started playing Hyper Light Drifter. Have you guys played that?
Oh, hell yeah.
It's really good.
Yeah.
Like, incredibly good. Yeah. I can't believe I didn't play it last year.
I like that game. I did not finish it because it just started kicking my ass.
Yeah.
It's gorgeous, though. I really liked it. Just, it felt like kind of a perfect mix of
so many
I grew up with.
Games.
I love that I don't know what's going on in Hyper Light Drifter. Like things are just kind of happening around me, and I'm like, okay, this is the world that exists here.
Yeah, but to go back to the Persona thing, I mean, obviously, yes, the portability of Zelda is huge, but also the fact that it's there's a story there, but it's mostly what you're doing. You know, it's like your way of interacting with it. Whereas, like, I got I don't know how many hours into Persona, and I forget where I left off, and I want to jump back into it, but I'm also like, what was I doing? What was the point there? And it's like, it's not, I wouldn't say it's necessarily like linear, but it's structured. And it's all
you
about
can't just do nothing.
Yeah, it's all about like time management and like. And whereas Zelda, you're like, I'm gonna go and blow up that tree and get wood out of it, and I'm gonna eat some bananas.
I still haven't beaten Zelda. I'm like 180 hours into it. Like it's just like that game that I can come back to for 20 minutes and screw around and feel satisfied. Whereas like a game, I mean, even like Marty's like 60 hours into Persona, but he hasn't touched it in like 3 weeks because it's like it just gets overwhelming, and I totally get that.
Yeah, and I mean, boohoo, poor us, but like we're also scrambling around checking out tons of different games, and it's hard to go back. Oh, funny story, I jumped back into The Witcher for just for the hell of it this weekend. I'm like, I'm gonna play a game I like to play.
You do that like once a year.
Yeah, I love that game. Last time I jumped in was apparently, according to my save file, was in September.
Mm.
So that means that since then, I've played. Horizon, Yakuza, Tomb Raider, Breath of the Wild, Persona. I'm trying to think what else, other like big games like that. So I jumped into Witcher and just immediately got my ass handed to me because I completely forgot how to play that game.
Yeah.
And I was like, how do I call my horse? And I just drank like three potions and I'm like, apparently not like that. That's not how you get the horse.
What do you want to do? Jumping between giant, especially open world games is hard.
Yeah, it's tricky. I think JRPGs are just, they're Dickensian. They're paid by the page almost, you know? Like people like them being long. If you made like a 4-hour JRPG, it wouldn't really work.
I mean, Child of Light is the closest, I think.
Yeah.
And it worked, but I think it's less, like part of the reason I love JRPGs is because by the time you finish like a 100-hour game, you are so invested in those characters.
You're attached because they're yours. You made them.
Exactly, exactly.
And no one else can have the same ones. What do you mean by the Child of Light comparison?
Well, just it's basically a JRPG, but it's only 8 hours
long.
It's
not that long. Yeah. I feel like it worked and then it was light enough or basically.
Yeah, totally. I mean, it's like
I liked that game.
That is the game I recommend to people who like turn-based mechanics but don't want to invest 100 hours.
Yeah.
Because I think Child of Light is a gorgeous game. I think it's
And Ubisoft was really good those 2 years that Child of Light and Valiant Hearts came out.
You know, well, and Rayman. Like, God, I want more Ubisoft games.
Yeah.
Anthony Kennedy says, what do you guys want to see from the Castlevania series on Netflix? What other game franchise do you foresee making this type of leap?
My answer is I don't. I don't want to watch a Castlevania series. Like, I like the Castlevania games a whole lot. I don't want to see that. I feel like it's just going to like butcher the attachment I have.
The trailer was pretty. I'm kind of in the same boat. Like I Castlevania is a weird franchise for me because I totally abandoned it. Like I loved Castlevania games as a kid, but I haven't played a Castlevania game in so long.
Shadow of something 2.
The 2 360 ones.
Shadow,
yeah,
that was the most recent one.
I think the last one I played was the DS ones that they were putting out for a while that were really good.
I mean, the Lords of Shadow 2 was really good, like in a way that I was surprised by how much I liked it because I didn't expect it to be good. I had to review it. It was like really good. There's this one boss fight slash kind of level that's just been overtaken by a toy maker. So everything's just like kind of these creepy toys. And if I remember it correctly, the boss fight is just this giant animated toy that you have to fight. Mm. It was a super cool.
Sounds like a nightmare that Max would have.
Yeah, it sounds like my desk. but no, like I totally screwed myself up on this because I saw that Frederator Studios was working on it and they make Adventure Time. And I was like, oh, it's going to be like Adventure Time, but with blood and vampires. That'll be cool. And then I was like, no, of course it's going to be like anime style. Like, the demographic for Castlevania doesn't want like a weird, like goofy cartoony version, but I was totally hoping it would be like a cartoon version of the old comics that you'd get in Nintendo Power.
Mm. Yeah.
But I feel like that'll probably maybe exist as like a webtoon. Like people be like, oh, it's like the Watchmen Saturday morning cartoon or whatever.
I mean, I would love for it to be, if I hear it's awesome, I will totally watch it, but it's not anything that I'm like.
Yeah, just
there's a lot of interesting lore in the Castlevania franchise. Like the Belmonts are very interesting people, but it's just, I don't need it.
Yeah,
I don't.
There's like so much good vampire anime out there.
Yeah.
Which is a sentence that Brian would make fun of me for saying if he was here. But no, like, I don't know. I would love to see Metal Gear get this treatment just because.
You just want everything Metal Gear, though.
Yeah. A Metal Gear cartoon show? Are you kidding me? That'd be awesome.
What would that be?
I don't care. I don't care at all.
Make it anyway.
There could be vampires in that, too. I don't know. It'd be rad to see a Zelda cartoon or, you know, just.
Yeah, a good Zelda cartoon.
Even that, what would that be? Like, it's so. I feel like I don't really want my favorite video game franchises to be made into TV series. Like,
I do as, like, an enriching thing. Like, I love the idea of, like, I don't know, like, if they want to tell the story before Breath of the Wild in cartoon form, like, everything leading up to it or something.
Yeah.
Sure. But, like, I don't need to see the game.
Injustice 2 comic is really good and, like, adds well to Injustice 2. But I think, like, a full series that stands alone just. I think it's just that we've had so many bad examples of that that it just haunts it for me, and I'm always like scared of that happening because it has so many times, basically.
Yep.
Yeah, I don't know. Castlevania, at the very least, I like that we get to say that word a lot because it's one of my favorite words, Castlevania.
Yeah.
Pretty good.
So it's like you've got like 2 minutes to think of a name of a scary place. What do we call it?
Castlevania.
David Schroeder says, what two games would you love to see a crossover made from? Real quick, Madden versus FIFA.
Wow. Football versus football.
Yep. They just go, they run out on the field and there's nobody knows the rules. They're just all running to each other.
I kind of like the idea of like soccer versus hockey.
Yeah.
That's like on ice. Like my favorite thing about watching hockey is that they fight all the time, but because they're all on ice, their skates just slip and they all just like trying not to fall over while trying to fight each other. It's brilliant.
Yeah. And they're all dressed up like lawn furniture. They're just like covered in funny pads and stuff and they got feet knives.
This is a really good question. I feel bad not having an answer. Yeah.
I feel like I need more time to think about it.
I mean, I know Marty has talked a lot about his like Armored Core Dark Souls crossover idea of like that idea that like you play it like a Dark Souls game, but instead of like leaving behind your souls or whatever, you literally leave your mech and then you're playing as the pilot. And so you have to get back to where the mech was.
That's so
and
good.
Then, yeah. Like that's awesome. And that's all him. But like that's a really cool idea. Something like that. I mean, like something where like you totally out of left field insert the mechanics of one game into another.
Hmm.
Yeah. I mean, this isn't really a crossover two games, but the one game that I always want made is if Rocksteady made a Justice League game like they make the Arkham games.
Yeah.
That's a thing that I've liked
everybody
for as long as I can remember. Or since Arkham Asylum came out, that's like what I've wanted. And that would be really cool.
I'd take that, but with like Batman, the animated series, like just all cell shaded.
That'd be cool.
You know, they could make it real fast because they wouldn't have to spend all that time making like carbon fiber and like realistic trash to drive the Batmobile through. Yeah.
I mean, Arkham is a good starting point for any plus because it's like any weird franchise, like I would love to see. Like I think the Arkham treatment was so smart and like the combat feels so good in those games.
So good.
Yeah.
I feel like before now I would have said Lord of the Rings and Assassin's Creed.
Whoops.
But here we are.
Yeah, exactly.
Pretty much. It's always fun to think about that kind of stuff. Really, I just like to see that all the sports games have to fight. They're just all in the big field.
Yeah.
Just NASCAR versus Madden. Just the cars driving around. The men have to run faster than them. That's why I don't make games.
It's basically Rocket League DLC.
So, yeah, that'd be good. this has been Beyond. We are obviously very busy with lots more E3 stuff. So stick around. The next couple weeks should be very interesting and exciting. You can keep track of what all of us are up to on Twitter. I'm Max Scoville. Lana is Charlanazard. And Andrew is Garfep. What are you on Instagram? Is it also
same? My Instagram's locked down, though. I keep my Instagram friends and family.
All right. Well, post some of those Japanese photos on Twitter, all right?
Yeah, I should do that.
All right. Well, on that note, Beyond. We'll be back next week. We love you.
Here's a quick question for you. How did you sleep last night? If your battle for a good night's sleep feels relentless, I have the answer. It's a podcast called Sleepwave, with meditations and hypnosis created to help you fall asleep. My relaxation techniques will help you feel calm and ready for sleep with soft music that will help you fall asleep in minutes. Most listeners never hear the end of an episode. So search Sleepwave on your favorite podcast app and find out why over 1 million people have fallen asleep to my voice.
Hey there, this is Justin Bartha. I made a funny new podcast, King of the Egg Cream. It has the greatest cast in the history of podcasts with actors like Louis Black.
I'm torn by my feelings for two women.
Bobby Cannavale.
You can eat it, or if someone hits you, you can put it on your cut.
Melanie Lynskey.
I wonder what these marvelous things are that look just like boiled chicken feet.
Jason Ritter.
I can break things and pick locks and kill people.
Michael Stuhlbarg.
The whole point is to inspire people that they should make themselves better.
Ari Grainer.
No, don't whet its appetite. What are you, an idiot?
Me, Justin Bartha.
That's not just any egg cream, that's a Lemke's special.
And all narrated by the hilarious Richard Kind.
This is the story of Harry Dalowitz. And how he rose from nothing to become New York's King of the Egg Cream.
So if you like funny true stories, come listen to King of the Egg Cream, available wherever you get your podcasts.